so they drove. Darkness was falling properly, and at the top of the road they passed a shadowy man with Barry Fairbrother's silhouette and gait. It gave Samantha a shock, and she glanced back at him, wondering who he could be. Mars's car turned left at the top of the road, then barely a minute later right into the half-moon of 1930s bungalows. Howard and Shirley's house, a low, wide-windowed building of red brick, boasted generous sweeps of green lawn at the front and back, which were mown into stripes during the summer by Miles. During the long years of their occupancy, Howard and Shirley had added carriage lamps, a white wrought-iron gate, and terracotta pots full of geraniums on either side of the front door. They had also put up a sign beside the doorbell, a round, polished piece of wood on which was written in old Gothic black lettering complete with quotation marks, Ambleside. Samantha was sometimes cruelly witty at the expense of her parents-in-law's house. Miles tolerated her jibes, accepting the implication that he and Samantha, with their stripped back floor and doors, their rugs on bare boards, their framed art prints, and their stylish, uncomfortable sofa, had the better taste, but in his secret soul he preferred the bungalow in which he had grown up. Nearly every surface was covered with something plushy and soft. There were no draughts, and the reclining chairs were deliciously comfortable. After he mowed the lawn in the summer, Shirley would bring him a cool beer while he lay back in one of them, watching the cricket on a widescreen TV. Sometimes one of his daughters would come with him and sit beside him, eating ice cream with chocolate sauce, especially made for her granddaughters by Shirley. "Hello, darling," said Shirley when she opened the door. Her short, compact shape suggested a neat little pepper pot in its sprigged apron. She stood on tiptoe for her tall son to kiss her, then said, "Hello, Sam," and turned away immediately. "Dinner's nearly ready. Howard! Miles and Sam are here." The house smelt of furniture polish and good food. Howard emerged from the kitchen, a bottle of wine in one hand, a corkscrew in the other. In a practiced move, Shirley backed smoothly into the dining room, enabling Howard, who took up almost the entire width of the hall, to pass before she trotted into the kitchen.
"Here they are, the good Samaritans," boomed Howard. "And how's the brassiere business, Sammy? Breasting the recession all right?"
"Business is surprisingly bouncy, actually, Howard," said Samantha.
Howard roared with laughter, and Samantha was sure that he would have patted her on the bottom if he'd not been holding the corkscrew and bottle.
She tolerated all of her father-in-law's little squeezes and slaps as the harmless exhibitionism of a man grown too fat and old to do anything more. In any case, it annoyed Shirley, which always pleased Samantha. Shirley never showed her displeasure openly. Her smile did not flicker, nor did her tone of sweet reasonableness falter. But within a short time of any of Howard's mild lewdnesses, she always tossed a dart, hidden in a feathery flourish, at her daughter-in-law. Mention of the girl's escalating school fees, solicitous inquiries about Samantha's diet, asking Miles whether he did not think Mary Fairbrother had an awfully pretty figure. Samantha endured it all, smiling, and punished Miles for it later.
"Hello, Mo," said Miles, preceding Samantha into what Howard and Shirley called the lounge. "Didn't know you were going to be here."
"Hello, handsome," said Maureen, in her deep, gravelly voice. "Gimme a kiss."
Howard's widowed business partner was sitting in a corner of the sofa, clutching a tiny glass of sherry. She was wearing a fuchsia pink dress with dark stockings and high, patent leather heels. Her jet-black hair was heavily lacquered into a bouffant, beneath which her face was pale and monkeyish, with a thick smear of shocking pink lipstick that puckered as Miles bent low to kiss her cheek.
"Been talking business. Plans for the new cafe." "Hello, Sam, sweetheart," Maureen added, patting the sofa beside her. "Oh, you are lovely and tanned. Is that still from Ibiza? Come sit down by me. What a shock for you at the golf club. It must have been ghastly."
"Yes, it was," said Samantha. And for the first time she found herself telling somebody the story of Barry's death, while Miles hovered, looking for a chance to interrupt. Howard handed out large glasses of Pinot Grigio, paying close attention to Samantha's account.
Gradually, in the glow of Howard and Maureen's interest, with the alcohol kindling a comforting fire inside her, the tension Samantha had carried with her for 2 days seemed to drain away, and a fragile sense of well-being blossomed. The room was warm and spotless. Shelving units on either side of the gas fire displayed an array of ornamental china, nearly all of it commemorating some royal landmark or anniversary of the reign of Elizabeth II. A small bookcase in the corner contained a mixture of royal biographies and the glossy cookbooks that had overrun the kitchen. Photographs adorned the shelves and walls. Miles and his younger sister Patricia beamed from a twin frame in matching school uniforms. Miles and Samantha's two daughters, Lexi and Libby, were represented over and again from babyhood to teens. Samantha figured only once in the family gallery, though in one of the largest and most prominent pictures. It showed her and Miles' wedding day, 16 years before. Miles was young and handsome, piercing blue eyes crinkled at the cameraman, whereas Samantha's eyes were closed in a half-blink. Her face was turned sideways, her chin was doubled by her smile at a different lens. The white satin of her dress strained across breasts already swollen with her early pregnancy, making her look huge. One of Maureen's thin, claw-like hands was playing with the chain she always wore around her neck, on which hung a crucifix and her late husband's wedding ring. When Samantha reached the point in her story where the doctor told Mary that there was nothing they could do, Maureen put her free hand on Samantha's knee and squeezed.
"Dishing up," called Shirley.
Though she had not wanted to come, Samantha felt better than she had in 2 days. Maureen and Howard were treating her like a mixture of heroine and invalid, and both of them patted her gently on the back as she passed them on her way into the dining room. Shirley had turned down the dimmer switch and lit long pink candles to match the wallpaper and the best napkins. The steam rising from their soup plates in the gloom made even Howard's wide, florid face look otherworldly. Having drunk almost to the bottom of her big wine glass, Samantha thought how funny it would be if Howard announced they were about to hold a séance to ask Barry for his own account of the events at the golf club.
"Well," said Howard in a deep voice, "I think we ought to raise our glasses to Barry Fairbrother."
Samantha tipped back her glass quickly to stop Shirley seeing that she had already downed most of its contents.
"It was almost certainly an aneurysm," announced Miles, the instant the glasses had landed back on the tablecloth.
He had withheld this information even from Samantha, and he was glad because she might have squandered it just now while talking to Maureen and Howard.
"Gavin phoned Mary to give the firm's condolences and touch base about the will, and Mary confirmed it. Basically, an artery in his head swelled up and burst."
He had looked up the term on the internet, once he had found out how to spell it, back in his office after speaking to Gavin.
"Could have happened at any time. Some sort of inborn weakness."
"Ghastly," said Howard.
But then he noticed that Samantha's glass was empty, and heaved himself out of his chair to top it up. Shirley drank soup for a while with her eyebrows hovering near her hairline. Samantha slugged down more wine in defiance.
"Do you know what?" she said, her tongue slightly unwieldy. "I thought I saw him on the way here, in the dark, Barry."
"I expect he was one of his brothers," said Shirley dismissively. "They're all alike."
But Maureen croaked over Shirley, drowning her out.
"I thought I saw Ken the evening after he died, clear as day, standing in the garden, looking up at me through the kitchen window, in the middle of his roses."
Nobody responded. They had heard the story before. A minute passed, full of nothing but soft slurps. Then Maureen spoke again with her raven's caw.
"Gavin's quite friendly with the Fairbrothers, isn't he, Miles? Doesn't he play squash with Barry? Didn't he, I should say?"
"Yeah, Barry thrashed him once a week. Gavin must be a lousy player. Barry had 10 years on him."
Near identical expressions of complacent amusement touched the candle-lit faces of the three women around the table. If nothing else,
They had in common a slightly perverse interest in Miles's stringy young business partner. In Maureen's case, this was merely a manifestation of her inexhaustible appetite for all the gossip of Pagford, and the goings-on of a young bachelor were prime meat. Shirley took a particular pleasure in hearing all about Gavin's inferiorities and insecurities, because these threw into delicious contrast the achievements and self-assertion of the twin gods of her life, Howard and Miles. But in the case of Samantha,